Welcome to the People of Relic Nikkei podcast, where you're going to hear the stories of the people that work at these two amazing advertising agencies. Relic focuses on tourism, and EKR works with a variety of businesses to help people get the right message to the right people at the right time. And we have amazing people in our organization, and I am going to interview them to hear the unique stories and backgrounds that they have to help you better get to know the people of Relic and EKR. Mamie Tonies, thank you for joining me on the People of Relic and EKR podcast. How you doing?
Good. Happy to be here.
I'm excited to do this, Mamie. It'll be fun to get to know you a little bit better.
Yeah, I've always been behind like the computer. I've never actually been on the podcast, so this will be fun.
This is your first time as a guest?
Mm-hmm.
We'll have some fun today. That's good. Okay, Mamie, let's just start. I kind of like to just ask people, who is Mamie Tonies? Like, big picture, who are you?
That's so hard to answer. Gosh.
That's why I like the question.
It's funny. I actually had to write like a here are 10 things you should know about me list. When I applied for my grad school, which I'm so, I hope I get in, but we'll see. And it was actually like really hard to write, but now I'm like, oh, maybe I should just read that. Maybe that'll just answer that question.
Well, hey, I think that's a great place to start if you can find it.
Yeah.
I actually feel like I need to write a 10 things you need to know about me. And it also reminds me of the movie 10 Things I Hate About You, which is a completely different
not the same vibe. If I wrote a 10 things I hate about myself list, I hope you would stop me
from reading it. That would be really mean.
Be like, no. Don't read that, Mimi. Stop. Don't do it.
In fact, I'd be upset with you just for having the list. I meant when 10 things I hate about you was a letter to someone else. Not that that's any better, but 10 things you hate about yourself would be rough.
Yeah, no. Okay, gosh, where is it? It was on my phone, but okay. So I wrote this list when I was applying for grad school at USC for their writing for television and film program.
Nice.
Which would be, I will hear back in March whether or not I get it, but it'd be a really cool opportunity and I would still be able to work, which is not always the way it is with grad schools. So it'd be very cool. So basically they asked for an autobiographical sketch was like the thing. And they gave like no, like, I don't know, parameters. They just like to go for it. So I decided to make a list. And it's a little artsy fartsy because that's how I am. But okay. So here are the 10 things you should know about me. One, I've read not two, not one, but three books where nothing happens for 700 pages. I guess it's because I value all thoughts, even the boring ones. Sometimes I wish I didn't. Two, I go to a lot of theater, play a lot of video games, and watch a lot of TV. I'm convinced it's a good thing. I'm afraid it's all an escape. Three, since I've started working as a podcast producer, I've listened to less music. I crave silence. I find empty space precious. Four, I audition and submit things I know I can't win just for the feedback. I love critique to an absurd degree. I promise I'm not a masochist. Five, I thought I couldn't write for a long time because I have dyslexia. I can just use Grammarly. I wonder how many other limitations I've put on myself. Six, it took me a long time to realize I had asthma. I thought it was just hard to breathe for everyone. Seven, I have lunch with my husband every day. He's a mailman, so I usually meet him on his route and then we eat in the car. I wonder if people think the mailman is having an affair. Eight, I grew up in rural Utah and learned I hate living in small towns. Big cities can overwhelm me. One day I hope I adjust. Nine, the only time I ever feel hatred is when I see white trucks. I don't think you're a good person if you buy a white truck. I'm convinced they'd willingly kill at any minor inconvenience. 10. My mom is masculine. She doesn't know how to respond when I cry. I can't really be mad at her for breaking gender stereotypes. 11. I plan on being an illustrator. The reality is I just like to color. I went through 3 coloring books during my mom's surgery. 12. I call my little sister once a week. It feels like she's my daughter. I wonder if she feels like I'm her mom. 13. My family fell apart July 28th, 2017. I blame Percy Jackson the musical. I still listen to the soundtrack. 14. I know God is real. I'm pretty sure he's proud of me. I don't know why I stopped praying. And number 15. My dad is dying. So that's my list.
Wow, Mamie. What a fascinating picture to draw of your life. And it really was kind of a written illustration. I don't know if that makes sense, but a written illustration of a lot of different components of who you are. What was it like to try to write that list?
Oh, it was so hard, actually. Cause I wanted it to represent me, right? That's the whole goal. But I also feel like I didn't want to throw things in that weren't relevant. And I also didn't want to throw things in that were too personal.
Yeah.
So it was like a hard balance. I think in the beginning, I just wrote a million of them. I think I had like 3 pages worth of like those little snippets. And then I kind of like went through and was like, okay, which ones feel the most like telling of certain character traits? And then it was actually kind of fun. I went to like all my friends and family and we're like, what is the one thing you think like defines me? And then I made sure that one of my things corresponded with everything that someone said. So like my little sister actually is the one who's like, you're the one who's my mom. Like you took care of me. That's how I define you. And so that's why I kept the one about calling my little sister every week. Because I was like, okay, to her, that's who I am, is just that snippet. So,
man, how do you feel like that exercise of writing all those things about yourself and then interviewing those closest to you and asking which ones they feel like really define you? What would that process be like for everyone? I'm sitting here trying to rack my brain going, I think I would learn a lot about myself going through that exercise.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I feel like I really did. Like, and not only did I learn a lot about myself, I learned a lot about how what my relationships are, you know, like I think something that was really interesting as I was going through the process is when I asked my like family and like, I'd say friends, like from high school and back, they were all like, oh, you are just the most giving person. Oh, you're so kind. Oh, you're so thoughtful. Like you are just so caring. You take care of people. And then when I asked people who were like from college onward, all of them were like, oh, you stand up for what's right. You care about truth. Like, and to see the like difference between those two was like almost watching my growth of like, oh, you're right. Like when I was younger, I would do anything for other people, regardless of whether it was the right thing to do. Like, and now I definitely value like, well, is it the right thing to help this person in this way? And like, what is the truth? What's actually going on here before I like pick a side and jump to someone's defense? And like that, like it was interesting seeing my growth in how they perceive me. So it was fascinating.
That is fascinating. It's that, you know, that could be a really cool, almost like a framework for self-reflection that you could actually be the author of. And I really believe that people would want to follow your method of finding out who you are. Like I'm legitimately sitting here thinking, I'd really like to go through that exercise. I'm a little nervous about the color of my truck, to be honest with you.
Is it white? I was a little
it's
worried.
It's gray, Mamie.
Oh,
it's gray.
Well, then you're fine. It's the white that gets me. I'm not going to lie. It's like trucks. I'm like, okay, it depends on you as a person. Like I'll give you some wiggle room there. If it's white, I think it's because one time I was at a movie theater and I was walking in to go see a movie. I think it was like Into the Spider-Verse. And I saw this white truck pull up into the parking lot. And I was like, there's no spots there. They'll just keep moving. And then they like turned like they were going to back into a spot. And I was like, there's a car there. What are they doing? And then they full throttled, slammed into that car. And I was like, like, and I was with my sister at the time and we were both just like, did they just do that on purpose? And then they sped away to the other side of the parking lot, mind you, where they were still completely visible, and then checked their own car and then drove away.
No.
Yes. And me and my sister were like, oh, okay. So they'll completely destroy this little like dinky car that was already beat up, and then they will go check on their car. Like, and that's what gets me. It's like the like caring about how you're viewed. It's like, it feels so like if you're using a truck to move things, if you're using a truck to like do stuff, you don't want a white one because it's going to get dirty. If you get a white truck, it feels like it's a status symbol and you're just trying to put other people down. You know what I mean? Like, that is how it feels.
Well, I could see why it would feel that way after that experience. That is yeah. an insane yeah. experience.
We had to call the cops.
I was going
to
ask you, so yeah. did this happen in your stand up for what's right era or your take care of other people era?
No, it did. So we like literally, and the thing was, so he was so dumb. He made it so easy. He was right there. Like, he wasn't even that far. Like, so we called the cops as soon as it happened. And then they were like, do you have his license plate number? And we're like, 1 second. Yeah, here it is. Like, he was still there. We could still read it. Like, he wasn't even smart about his hit and run. Like,
oh man. So they came yeah. and got him.
Well, we don't know. He sped away after that. And we were like, can we go? Our movie's about to start. And they were like, yeah, we got it. We have his license plate number. Like,
oh, that's so crazy.
I assume. But like, it was crazy. It was so wild.
Wow. So let's talk a little bit. And I want to just hear a little more of your story. We've got a really good idea now of who you are, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. And there may be a couple of those that I'd be curious to ask more questions on. But let's just have you describe what your childhood was like, Mamie. You mm-hmm. talked about growing up in a small town. Mm-hmm. How would you describe your childhood?
Rough. That's how I would describe it. My parents moved to Cache Valley, Utah when I was 7. So originally from California.
Say no more.
And it's just so kidding. Pretty. No, it's so pretty, but they don't like outsiders. Mm. And so I never belonged. And it wasn't anything I did, you know. It was just the culture in that area was very much like, I mean, for example, I wasn't allowed to sing in the primary program because I wasn't from there.
No.
Yes. And so I was like excluded because I was the only one who wasn't from there. And as a kid, of course, I thought that was my fault. Like, I thought if they just liked me enough, they would ignore that rule and let me sing with them. You know?
I'm blown away.
Yeah. So it was like a really, really harsh community to grow up in. And then on top of that, like, my parents are very, very Democrat, which really did not help at all. That's what caused people to be banned from visiting our house. Like, my friends weren't allowed to come over.
Because your parents were Democrat?
Yes. Because my parents were Democrat and they didn't want their children influenced. Like, and I was the bad kid that they didn't want their kids hanging out with. Even though I do not know how to express how much of a goody two shoes I am. Like, I am so goody two shoes, I won't even break a rule if I think it might possibly be a rule. It doesn't even need to, like, if it's not even a rule. People will be like, it's fine, Mimi, they don't care. And I'll be like, but it might be a rule, so I'm not gonna do it. Like, that's the kind of person I am. I'm such a goody two shoes. And like, I was the bad kid that people weren't allowed to go to their house. And so we were really, really isolated, like, just because how do you like, like, you know, feel part of a community when they, you know, treat you like that. So my best friends were my older sister and my little sister, and we're 5 years apart. So that wasn't even really that easy. Like, if I'm 10, Eliza's 5 and my older sister's 15. Like, that's not a normal group.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A 15-year-old does not want to be hanging out with a 10-year-old. So it was just kind of like hard to find where I fit. And I found that almost exclusively in my family, which I think is why I became so obsessed with like being a good person and helping people, because it was my family that I was interacting with. And I felt like, and, you know, family has drama and conflicts and stuff. But if I made sure that everyone in my family felt loved by me, I at least would never be not talked to. I at least would have friends always, no matter what. So it was like, you know, and like there were a lot of health issues with my parents. Both of them were disabled. So there's a lot of responsibility. So it was like, it was not a fun, easy, breezy childhood. Yeah. But that being said, like, I think it made me a lot of who I am. And I'm actually really happy for that time. Like, I'm really grateful for my family, for the, like, them stepping up. My parents were so good about, like, they made sure that they knew that I knew it wasn't my fault that this was happening. And then my parents, they're big into like reading and television and story. And so we just as a family kind of fell into that escapism altogether. So it was like entrenched in storyhood, but like not isolated in that way. Like me and my sister would listen to audiobooks together. So like I would read with her, you know. So it was like it made stories and books and media like so important. And that's still like I still value that. It's still really important to me. So it made me a lot of who I am. And I'm still really close to all my family. So like there are pros. It took me a while to realize that people didn't just hate me inherently. That was something I learned when I went to college. I was like, oh, not everyone just like doesn't trust me by default. This is nice. Like, you know, and it's been really nice to like kind of let go of all that like expectation of resentment and just like actually exist. So I'm glad it happened then and not later. I think it would have been much harder if like that happened to me after I grew up. But because it's like my baseline, everything's just gotten better since then. So,
you know, Mamie, I think it's fascinating to hear about your childhood and some of the challenges that you went through. I'm a big believer in resiliency and the value of resiliency for adulthood, that if you learn to be resilient in your childhood, you're so much better prepared for the challenges that come with adulthood. And I hear some of the stuff that you're saying, and then I see some of the work that you do on a day-to-day basis. And for example, how much of a meaningful story can someone who hasn't had very much adversity in their life tell? You know, and I just sat through a presentation that you put together of how you plan to tell four very different and unique stories. And I think you are better equipped to tell those stories because you've experienced adversity, you've experienced challenges, you've gone through some really hard things with your parents being disabled and, you know, the situations that you grew up in. And I honestly feel like there's so many people that if they could just kind of see what the adversity was going to do for them in the long term, maybe it wouldn't be as difficult for them. Because I see you, and you're such a happy person now, at least in the interactions that I've had with you, and you take so much pride in your work. And when you do something good, I can see the kind of the pride on your face when you do that. And it just makes me wonder, without the adversity that you experienced as a kid, would you be able to feel those things so deeply? Would you be able to share the stories that you share or tell the stories that you tell? And I don't know. That's one of the more interesting parts of the human experience that I look at, the role of adversity and the value of knowing that you personally overcame something very difficult.
Mm-hmm. I also think adversity is what allows you to relate to others. Like, I think that's one of the things that over and over again, I'm so grateful for. Like, yeah, like growing up like that taught me, you know, to not care what anybody else thinks and taught me to like find like happiness in my own network and to like, you know, and I'm grateful for those things. It's made me strong and it's made my life now much better. Like, I think there's a lot of happiness I have now because of that background. But I also think like, I can just understand and relate to more people, you know, like when someone is like, oh yeah, my sister has cancer, even though my sister doesn't have cancer, I'm like, I know what it's like to have a sibling in the hospital. And I'm so sorry that happened. And even though it's not the same at all, my little sister's fine. She survived and we're all good. Like, I know the fear. And so I kind of know where they're at emotionally. I know to not be like, well, chin up, everything will be okay, because that's not what you need in that moment. But how would I know that if I hadn't gone through something similar, or even just known what pain was or fear of loss? Like, it just opens the door to understanding others so much better that I think it really deepens and enriches most of my relationships.
Interesting. I feel like you've kind of touched on it, but I'm going to ask the question more directly. You know, the childhood experiences that you had, what role do you think they've played in making you who you are today?
I think they're the foundation, you know. I think all of my main like skills and I think all of my main attributes as a person and how I function in the world is because of how I grew up. Like, because it wasn't just like, oh, I had a community that hated me, so I learned how to be like independent. But it's like growing up, everyone in my family was relying on me from a very young age. And sometimes when I tell people like more details, they're like a little horrified. And I'm like, but it's not because anyone was lacking. It's not because anyone wasn't trying their best, but it was because I was actually the most capable, which is odd. Like, I shouldn't have been the most capable at 15 in my family to be in charge of the family finances and dinner, but I was because of these million other circumstances. And so all of the like life experience that I feel like you learn when you're an adult, I learned at a very young age. And so I almost got to speed run how to be like a human. And now I get to just exist in this. I know how to take care of myself. I know how to budget. I know how to, you know, do laundry. I know how to cook. I know how to handle medical issues. And now I don't need to learn those things. I can just learn more about myself. I can explore the human experience. I can, you know, spend more time in like the philosophical and the ideal, because I don't need to be learning those basic survival things. I already learned them. And I think like without my childhood, I wouldn't be there yet. You know, I think if without my childhood, I'd be like, oh my gosh, how do I budget? I think that's what I would be doing right now. And instead, I'm sitting here contemplating like, okay, what kind of art best would help? Because like with the pitches that I gave, right? I really was thinking what media would best help and be like a good light and influence in our target demographic's life. That was the thought process. It wasn't like, oh, what would I want to write? Or, oh, what would be fun? It was like, okay, what could really fill a need? And I could spend, you know, days thinking about, okay, what do women who are aged 20 to 35 need? And I could actually come to a conclusion, you know? And I don't know if I would have been able to do that without the childhood I had.
I think that's fascinating because so many people's minds are filled with stress about the things that you had accelerated learnings of because of the way you were raised. And now your head doesn't have to be filled with that as you're trying to, you know, work on a project or tackle something. It almost allows you to be a little bit more focused from the sounds of it.
It makes me more focused and makes me more free. Like, I really, like, I feel like I crack this joke a lot that I stressed all of my stress out when I was a kid. And now I don't need to stress anymore. Like, there are things that stress me out, right? Like, things come up. But, like, for the most part, like, as a kid, man, I every day, like, I was just like, how are we going to survive? Like, like, that was my, like, mindset as a child, you know? And then I became, like, when I went to college, life got easier. And I don't think that's the norm. But, like, I was like, oh, I only had to take care of me? What do I do with all this free time? Like, I'm easy. I take nothing, you know? And so, like, it just freed me up because I was so filled with it that, like, now I feel like, oh. Like, even, like, being married, everyone's like, oh, it's going to be hard. Like, first year is tricky. And I'm like, how? I don't understand why it's hard. Like, yeah, things come up. Things always come up. I'm not worried about it.
Well, but think about that, Mamie, because I think it's interesting. For a lot of people, especially people who haven't experienced a lot of adversity, when you're married, suddenly you're experiencing adversity in a way that you haven't experienced it before. But let's look at your childhood. You had to take care of other people already. You had to watch out for other people already. Your decision-making growing up couldn't be selfish decision-making. You had to consider the needs of others. And now in your marriage, you only have one person that you have to be concerned for the well-being of, as opposed to growing up being concerned and responsible for the well-being of others. So for you, I actually think it's very clear why marriage feels a little easier to you. And it speaks to the value of the adversity that you had growing up, even though it was painful at that time.
Yeah. I would also say I'm like so lucky because there was no one who was bad. you know, like I've been listening to a lot of Life Speech because that's my job. And so many people are like, oh, my mom.
Let's tell people what Life Speech is just so for those listening.
It's Life Speech and Then You Die. It's a Myrtle Beach podcast. It's actually so good. Like I'm so happy I work on it. And it's just about the life stories of people who live in Myrtle Beach. And it is so crazy to hear what people are going through and also so uplifting to hear what they've done with the adversity they've gone through. But like a lot of them have these people who actively like hurt them, you know, like a lot of them have like an alcoholic parent who is struggling with their own issues that was like abusive or hurtful or, you know, like there's these like situations and they have to learn a lot about forgiveness. And I will say that's something that I haven't had to deal with as much because for as hard as my childhood was, nobody was mean. Nobody was selfish. Nobody was actively trying to hurt anybody else. Nobody was accidentally hurting other people and not caring about it. Like the reasons my childhood was hard was because of situation and illness. And my parents did their best to love and to care no matter how much pain they were in. And so like I never had to be like, okay, I need to forgive my mom for hitting me. No. I didn't have to forgive my mom because 100% of the time, my mom was doing everything she could. It just wasn't enough. And so it was like I got to learn, instead of forgiveness, I got to learn like patience, I'd say, and understanding of like someone can love you and do everything for you and you still need to step up and take care of yourself. And that's not their fault. And you need to love and appreciate them for the care they gave you because you need to see like they tried and that matters, you know. And so I'm like really lucky in that way of like there's no one in my family I'm not talking to. There's no one like there's no resentment towards someone who hurt me. Like it's just understanding that people aren't perfect and that we're all trying our best to take care of each other, which I think has really made my mindset really nice when it comes to others.
I think that's what's so refreshing, Mamie, about kind of your perspective on life is I think you've been through a lot of things that are more challenging than other people that I've chatted with on a like in a general sense, but your perspective on perceiving malice or thinking that somebody's out to get you or anything like that, it is refreshing because in most cases, I always say when I actually have a nephew who's a big conspiracy theorist.
Okay? Oh, yeah,
he loves to talk to me about conspiracies. And I said, never chalk up to malice what could be chalked up to ignorance or incompetence. And some of these were government conspiracies. But it's like in most cases, it has a lot less to do with an intentional infliction of pain and a lot more to do with the struggle that somebody's having in their own situation, in their own life. And so anyway, it's a really refreshing perspective. I would urge anybody listening who wants to learn more about some of the things that Mamie's been through, make sure that you chat with Mamie directly, find some time, because even in some of the conversation we had before we started recording, I think we've only scratched the surface of the interesting life of Mamie Toney's. But I'd like to move the conversation, Mamie, to maybe what led you to your role at Relic and EKR and working on our podcast team.
Yeah. Okay. So this is my like career story is like one of my favorites. It's so funny. It starts in high school, which I don't think it really does for most people. But I took a digital media class from a teacher. I was like, oh yeah, Photoshop could be cool. And she was like, no, it's not just Photoshop. It's like, we're going to learn about audio editing, video editing, and digital, like Photoshop, illustrating, visual editing. And I was like, cool. Took it, loved it. It was my favorite class, whatever. Junior year. So I moved on, you know, senior year came and I was focused on other things. And like, right, I don't remember when it was like end of December, maybe beginning of January, I think. Whenever the basketball season is, which I don't remember when that is.
Late fall.
There we go. I just remember it was snowing some of the time. So it's like somewhere in there. She comes up to me and she's like, hey, I set up an internship with the Valley Channel for you. You're going to be working on basketball games. And I was like, what? Like, I had not asked her to do that. I didn't even know what she meant. Like, she was like, oh yeah, they needed a student. I put your name in, you start Tuesday. And I was like, okay, Mrs. Gom, like, go off, I guess. Like, you tell me what to do. So I show up. It's this little, like, rickety old trailer. And there's just a guy, and he's like, oh yeah, like, come on in. You're going to be the technical director. And I was like, I'm going to be the what? And he's like, so you're going to be in charge of switching cameras, and you're going to be in charge of getting replays. And I was like, okay. And he's like, also keep track of the score. And I was like, how's basketball scored? 1 second. Wait, like, back up, you know? And so he just throws me in. And all of a sudden, I'm going to every basketball game in the Valley, like, running the TV station. Like, that's how it felt like, you know. I had the, like, he was in my headset, and he'd be like, okay, get ready to switch to camera two. And I'd go, camera two, check. And he'd go, switch. And I'd hit it. And like, I was like, I was in it. And I loved it. It was super fun. But, you know, then basketball season ended and I moved on with my life and I didn't think anything of it. And then in college, I needed a job because that happens. And I saw a secretary position for BYU Broadcasting. And I was like, I could be a secretary. What's that? Keeping track of a schedule? I'm so good at keeping track of a schedule. So, like, I apply. The only, like, work experience I have is that technical director gig. I show up to interview, and they're like, so, how would you feel about being an audio technician instead? And I was like, I mean, sure, like, whatever. I just want a job, but I wasn't going to say that, you know? I'd be like, yeah, that'd be cool. Like, I liked my work there. If it's anything like that, that'd be great. So then they interviewed me for that instead of the secretary position, and then offered it to me the next day. And I worked there. And then from that moment on, it was like crazy. And I do not expect this to continue to be my life, because that would be insane. I never had to apply for a job. After that, I'd get calls. So I'd be working and someone would be like, hey, we need you in the music department. Can we convince you to come here instead? And I was like, yeah, like, and so I got a really wide variety of experience of, like, live music, radio, even like language tests, podcasts, like, and that's what I did for work my entire time at college. And I was in college a little bit longer than maybe I should have been. So it was like a good chunk of time that I had all these different experiences. And I just really love the medium. And I really loved being able to, you know, tell stories and, like, help other people tell their stories, I guess, is another way of really putting it. Like, I love being able to capture an experience for other people or help someone else tell their story. And you could really do that in all the jobs that I was doing, except maybe the language test ones. But I still really enjoyed that one too. And I had just, like, a ton of crazy experience. I graduated and was like, okay, I got to find, like, a real grown-up job. I applied, I think it was to, like, 37 different jobs. And I only got an interview for one, and it was for, like, telemarketing. Oh. And I was like, I can't do it. I still have savings. I can't do it. Like, I'm going to hold out a little bit longer. And I started to feel pretty down, like, oh, maybe that was a fluke. Maybe I won't get anything. Maybe, like, I'm not as good at what I do as I thought I was. And luckily, like, my husband, he was my boyfriend at the time, was, like, crazy supportive. And he was like, you take a month, don't apply for anything, I'll support you, which was, like, huge. Like, I do not think most boyfriends would do that. And I don't know if I would trust most people to, like, just take care of my financial needs for a month. But he was like, you need a break from applying for jobs, just take a month off and then you can go back to it. Like, he's a postman, he has enough money. He's like, I'll be fine. You, like, just rely on me for a minute. So it was, like, kind of a leap of faith. I took a month off, and during that month, I didn't even make it a month. I tried. I didn't even make it a month. But during that month, I got an email from Indeed about this position here. And I was like, okay, I'll apply for this. And my husband was like, well, boyfriend at the time, was like, you said a month. And I was like, but this job is perfect. And he was like, okay, one job. Like, it was his, like, okay, you can't. So I applied for it, and luckily I got it, and it is more amazing than I could have ever, like, expected. So like, it really feels like it just kind of like fell into my lap every time.
So let's tell everybody what that role is.
I am a podcast producer here. I work mainly with Myrtle Beach.
Yeah. And really that's a pretty fortunate place to end up too, because Myrtle Beach probably gives us as much maybe creative liberty on some of the podcasts as any destination. You said that it's been a great experience. I'm curious why.
Oh, well, I think, first of all, I think that creative liberty is huge. I really respect Adam C. for what he does. I don't know if I could do it, if I'm being honest. Like, the writing questions, listening, editing, like that, like I could do it for a week. I don't know if I could do it every week. But like, Myrtle Beach doesn't ask me to do that. Myrtle Beach like asked me for very different things, which is listen to 3 hours worth of content and then use my like creative brain to figure out what's good, what I like, what would be a compelling story, what to cut out. It becomes like a puzzle, which is very fun for me. And then it's put it together in a way that it can impact and touch other people. And that's always been my goal with whatever media I make, is how do I help the people who are consuming whatever I create? I think too much media gets made just for like money or for self-indulgence, when really media should be made for the consumers and should be for them. And I feel that with Myrtle Beach a lot, like, and with Life's a Beach, it's like meant to help its listeners, meant to be engaging and uplifting. And so it like really aligns with my personal values, which is super lucky. Like, that is not always how it is. And then I mean, shout out to Julie. She is the best manager I've ever had, ever. And like really supports me and then like helps me do what I need to do. Like, there was like a week where I was sick and she 100% was like, you don't need to work. Like, you can take the time off. And I was like, no, I want to work. I want to keep doing it. And she's like, okay, but like, maybe you take a nap, like sleep in a little and then work a little later so that you're getting more rest. And I was like, and that's what I did. And it helped me recover so much faster. And like, not every manager would do that. Not every manager would take the time to really hear where you are and what you need and then let you do that within like, you know, the company standards, right? I still worked my full hours. I just shifted it an hour later so I could get a little more sleep, rest a little bit more, heal a little bit faster. And like, that's huge. Like, the support that I receive and like how much, like, anytime I'm like, oh, I'm a little overwhelmed, I can't edit this episode, Adam just takes it. You know, like the support that our team has just makes it so that I feel much more capable of doing what I ultimately love doing. And so it's like, I can't, like, it's perfect, you know? And like, I think eventually, ultimately down the line, I want to be writing more than I am right now. But like, other than that, this is the kind of work environment that like I feel I really thrive in and I feel very lucky to be in.
That's awesome. And to be clear, you've had a pretty significant impact on our organization as well in the time that you've been here, as has Adam C., who you mentioned, who's producing this episode. And so, yeah, Mamie, it's fun to hear your experience here. I think one of the things that we've really tried to do a better job of is finding the role that's going to be the best fit for the skills of the person, you know, and sometimes that means there's a little bit of shifting of responsibilities and shifting of departments and things like that. But I do feel like you are in the perfect role for at least for you and our organization. And what I hope we create is a path to where we can do more projects that require more in-depth writing and mm-hmm. things like that, which I think we're well on our way. Partly based on the presentation you gave us the other day, we're pitching fiction podcast opportunities for Myrtle Beach, and I just thought you nailed that presentation.
Thanks. I've been enjoying like revising it, and I'm really awesome. Excited to see whether or not the client likes it, what they like, what they don't, and where we can go from there. Like, it's been so fun.
Great. Well, Mamie, I think we're getting fairly close to out of time. So I want to ask you to look forward into the future, into your crystal ball. If you had to look at your career, let's pretend it's 25, 30 years from now, and you were to say it was a super successful career, what does success look like for you?
I mean, in a perfect world. Well, there's the abstract and the like more concrete. In an abstract sense, I will feel very accomplished and happy with my career if I was able to work with people creatively to make media that I'm proud of that helped others in a big way. Like that's all. And whatever form that takes, I'll be pleased with that. If, you know, I had to take a like more concrete, this is what I hope the avenue is, you know, is I'd love to be a showrunner. I'd love to work with a team, a writer's room, writing television, and making a TV show that I'm like really proud of that had an impact on people. I think that's awesome. Like really the dream.
Awesome. Well, Mamie, it's been incredible to get to know you a little bit better in this conversation. I urge anybody that's listening to make sure they take the time to get to know you and maybe ask you some questions about your list at the beginning or some of the experiences that you've shared. But I'm really happy you're here, Mamie, and I appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk to me today.
Yeah, it was fun.
This is one of the many stories of the people of Relic and EKR. I hope you'll stick with us and listen to the other stories that we release on a weekly basis and get to know our whole team. We've got some amazing people here, and we hope you enjoy it.